Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey hustlers, we know that this 2024, the entrepreneurial journey is filled with challenges. An often overlooked aspect is the time-consuming task of processing payroll and managing government requirements. And did you know that the average admin spends a whopping 50 hours per month dealing with just government compliance? That's time you could be spending on growing your business, or let's be honest, taking a well-deserved break. But fear not, we got a game changer for you, introducing Sprout Solutions and their tailored solutions for MSMEs called the Payroll Starter. With Sprout Solutions Payroll Starter, you can finally reclaim your time and get your life back on track. Say goodbye to the stress of remembering tax dates or worrying about missed payroll runs. This bundle is designed to make your life easier and your business more efficient. And here's the best part. The cost starts just at 5,000 pesos per month for businesses with up to 10 employees. Yep, you heard that right. That's just 5,000 pesos per month. So why spend another minute drowning in payroll paperwork when Sprout can revolutionize the way you manage your payroll and government requirements? Take the first step towards a more efficient business today. Visit sprout.ph/payrollstartermonthly5k. If you missed that, don't worry. We have it in the description box of this episode. So click that too. And again, big shout out to Sprout Solutions because your time is too valuable to be spent on paperwork. Reclaim it with their Payroll Starter. Now let's begin this episode.
The Hustle Share podcast is brought to you by PDAX. PDAX is a homegrown cryptocurrency exchange that offers the best rates among local cryptocurrency exchanges. Download the PDAX app now on the Google Play Store, App Store, or Huawei App Gallery. Start trading Bitcoin, Ethereum, and other cryptocurrencies for as low as 50 pesos by signing up on podlink.co/hustleshare PDAX. Also powered by Limitless Connect. Limitless Connect can provide digital CX solutions. The teams of Limitless Connect have years of CX experience, which equip them as the driving contact centers in the future. Sign up for a free consultation with Limitless Connect at www.limitlesscx.com. With Limitless Connect by your side, anything is possible. Also powered by PodMachine, the simplest way to grow and edit your podcast. Sign up now at podmachine.com and use the code HustleShare to get one free edit.
So accepting the fact that life isn't fair, so play with the hands you're dealt with, and knowing that you have to keep working on improving every single day, right? Continuous improvement, but knowing there's no ceiling to that, then you're like, that's great. You know, you're just liberated from that pressure.
Welcome to HustleShare, the podcast that features the daily grinds of unique hustlers around the world to show not our differences, but that our hustles are very much alike. Now here is your host, Ronster Baityong.
Welcome to this episode of the HustleShare podcast. We have one of the most amazing guests that you guys should hear about, because again, it is our final episode for this year as our season finale. We had to make sure we are going to do it to the most used and most hype word in the startup land this year, which is the metaverse. So we got to go full metaverse on this episode. But again, we don't just invite some random founder into this episode. We have one of the best that you can always hear from and hear about. And again, without further ado, I need to welcome the co-CEO of Bit2Me, Mr. Ko Onozawa. Welcome to the show.
What an awesome intro.
Thank you so much. And again, Ko is literally calling us from which city, just to represent, because again, we're not in the same time zone.
Today, we're in Alicante, Spain. It's
Alicante.
Right in a province of Valencia, here on the Mediterranean coast of Spain.
Oof, that is amazing. And again, that's one of the first questions I wanted to ask, why you're there. But before we get carried away, I need to ask you the most important question and the last one I'll ask for 2022. The $1 million question. Cole, what's your hustle?
Well, my hustle, what a general question, big question. My hustle as co-CEO of Bitumi, we're the largest crypto firm here in Spain. We've been around since 2015.
Wow.
And my main hustle is just trying to bring two things, crypto adoption and crypto education.
Gotcha.
So we boast of having the largest crypto academy,
wow,
or Web3 academy in the Spanish speaking world. We had over 5 million alumni last year.
Mm-hmm.
And on our adoption business, which is our brokerage wallet, our crypto exchange, our online MBA, and you know, we have a launch pad for other tokens. We're just above 600,000 users,
wow,
here in the Iberian Peninsula, Spain, mm-hmm, Portugal, Andorra, and soon, very soon, in Latin America. We're around 100 different countries, but I'd say 85% or more are in the Iberian Peninsula. And increasingly, we're going to expand into Latin America slowly but surely.
There you go. Or if you want to go via Gibraltar and then cross the narrow sea all the way to Morocco, that's also one thing. But again, amazing, amazing story. But I need you to buckle up. Because again, guys, though he is, you know, technically dominating the Hispanic world through crypto, he is our bay. Okay, he's a bay, right? He grew up. There you go. He is Cebuano. But again, before we get carried away, I need you to buckle up, my man, because we need to go to the origin story of how a Cebuano bay went all the way to Spain and, you know, started the biggest crypto company in Spain. But I need you to buckle up because we're going to have to ride the Hustle Share time machine. Choppy waters around Algeria real quick, but again, we're back now. All right, but again, man, I was before we started recording, I was fanboying because I didn't know, and this is me being an idiot once again, because one of your first companies is one of the most amazing local products I've ever seen done, and it's so simple, but it's so amazing. Loud Bastard. So again, shout out to Idea Space for giving me one of my Loud Bastards, because I've always gotten FOMO'd out of this when I see this, like, oh my god, this is such an amazing thing. And again, smartphones were new, you shove it in there, then all of a sudden you have a loudspeaker,
right?
But again, just fanboying, but I want to understand, because again, I know Onozawa's, just to give context, because because of my first startup. I know your brothers Ken and Kaz, because I know one thing, and this is not even disputed. Back then, I don't know now, so I'm an old fart. You guys threw the best parties during Singulog. And in my nightlife app days, I just see the pictures. I haven't even been to one, because I went to Singulog my first time probably around 2014, 2015, right? And it was all too crazy. And you guys threw a big party there too. I was able to attend.
Yep. They used to call our house Casa Loco.
There you go.
But we always had people over.
Right. The Onozawas were somewhat, when you hear that last name, you know they're legit. But how was it growing up in Cebu? And were you guys an entrepreneurial family by default?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I'm such a mix of different nationalities and ethnicities. Obviously, my last name tells everything, right? But I am proudly Cebuano, born and bred. In fact, I used to say I'm Cebuano first, Filipino second.
There you go. I don't know what that even means. Right? Last Shan is in your blood. There you go.
I know. And this is just being a bi, right? And yeah, entrepreneurship has been within the family ever since. You know, my father's an entrepreneur. My mother's an entrepreneur.
Wow.
Her parents were entrepreneurs. So both my grandfathers were entrepreneurs. So it was, I guess, kind of natural for us. And until this day, all my siblings, including myself, are entrepreneurs.
Awesome.
So I guess it's just natural for us to kind of leap into what we love and what we're passionate about.
Got it.
And reinvent ourselves again and again and again.
Yeah.
Fail again and again and again, or triumph again and again and again. And that's what I guess in our family we feel more comfortable, and that's our comfort zone. Amazing. Our comfort zone is being away from our comfort zone. Nice. And I have my family to thank for that. And so yeah.
I have a question in terms of how you were exposed, because again, entrepreneurial families by default. I've seen this time and time again where, you know, somehow, some way, you're not even aware of it growing up, but you're being taught entrepreneurship, right?
Yeah.
It's either you being forced to contribute, or a little bit of forced labor to help out and whatnot, or it's just part of the daily grind. You see your parents do it. It's part of
Yeah, I guess exactly. I think it's a bit of both, or a bit of everything. So just a quick recap, like my father is a Japanese person, right? Born and raised in Japan. So he moved to the Philippines in the 80s. And as an immigrant, like a lot of, you know, let's say Chinese Filipino families, for example, you have to kind of just do your thing, right? He had to set up a business. And his father, my grandfather, had his own business in Japan also. And they both did totally different things. And then on my mother's side, her grandfather came from Spain and also reinvented himself during the colonial period and made his own business, which eventually my grandfather took over. And so I guess it was just that lineage of immigrant family type,
right,
or wanting to do something of your own, and thankfully having, you know, the support, social resources or whatever it is that they had to get it done. And so like me right now in Spain, having to come here and naturally for me is starting my own thing.
Nice.
Although, to set the record straight, Bitumi, I did not found Bitumi. It was founded by my two partners, Andre and Leif, in 2015. I came in early on when we were, you know, only less than 30 employees as an advisor. And eventually helped Andre and Leif grow the business to what it is right now, with 300 different employees around Spain. Right. As co-CEO of the company.
Anything under 50 employees, it's still founder-like hustle. Whether you're a first employee and whatnot, that's it's too small for you to even not be considered just like a founder, whether you're an employee or a late advisor, because there's just so much that you have to do. But I'll just zoom in a little bit. What were the conversations like during at home? Because I've been exposed to entrepreneurial in Cebuanos before. The Sarmientos, their political family and whatnot, right? So Drew and the twins and whatnot. I was able to visit them in their house in Cebu one time when I was still working in Groupon. I was like, wow, the type of conversations they have here is not the type of conversations I have back home, right? And again, it just sparks the type of stuff that you're ingrained with as well. And what did you see your parents do on a day-to-day grind that I guess left a mark in you till now?
So a little bit of my mom's side, there's a lot of conversation from my mom's side, right? So she's very expressive. She's the type of person who would take us out from school in the middle of the school year just to travel and visit like, you know, some random country. And then we'd go, we wouldn't do all the touristy stuff. We would go and talk about the local commerce there, the heritage, the culture, and we would conversations turned into arguments a lot because each one had their own opinion, and she really kind of liked that. And so we would talk a lot about just what these different ideas are of people and how, you know, how it was less about entrepreneurship and making money and more about what a cool idea and how that person was able to build something or create something or launch something. You know, it was always about like launching something, as opposed to, we never talked about like getting jobs. You know, she let us study whatever the hell we wanted to study. I studied anthropology, just to get an idea. Like, she had no, so she was always just, do whatever you want that you're passionate about. And So that kind of naturally made us think, oh, we're passionate about this. And you know, there's no job for that. So we're just going to build it. I'm just going to do it. So my brother's like, we want a big party in Sindulog. Let's just do it. And they did it. And on my father, like my father is very Japanese in a sense. So he would, I remember always he would wake me and my brother up saying like, yo, wake up. Can't make money in your sleep.
Work hard.
You got to work hard. Oh, what sacrifice. You know, Japanese culture is all about being dutiful.
Yes.
And so I got that from my dad, just being dutiful and eating shit if you have to. And then on my mom's side, it was more about being open and following your passions and actually executing it. So if you combine both, you have accountability, which means if you talk about a lot of things that you want to do and you don't end up doing it, that's meaningless.
Right.
You know. So if you're passionate about something and you have discipline to actually make it happen, then you got to back it up. Walk the talk. And that's where our entrepreneurship gene came from, I think.
Absolutely. You know, that's amazing. Now, again, I want to deep dive a little bit on passion, because if that was you at a young age, you already wanted or you had the go signal to pursue your passion, right? How did that anthropology and archaeology come through? Because again, one of the very first things you'll see in his LinkedIn is he was a junior underwater archaeologist in Nat Geo. Holy shit. What was anthropology or archaeology even like? And what was the career path you saw when you were trying to do this at an early age?
So thankfully at an earlier age, I knew that I wanted to start my own thing. And my passion at the time was, our dream was to become an ambassador or a diplomat. And I applied to study foreign service. And I didn't know, as a Japanese citizen also, which requires single citizenship, I couldn't be a diplomat for the Philippines for another country, for example. But I was so passionate about cultures. Right. And yeah, that's because my mom, you know, she's big on cultural heritage. And so right. I just wanted to learn about people, love people, and learn different languages. Right. And so anthropology was the best way for me, I guess, to have that exposure. And then that led to majoring in archaeology. And eventually that took me on a path of where my curiosity just led me to one place to another. And my love, this is a kind of a segue, but I love music. Like so much. Right. Like in high school.
Like a true born Onozawa from Cebu. That's what's up.
I'd make playlists on my own. I'd make playlists for others. You know, I'd set up a group on Facebook with just about sharing music. And so when I did my archaeological digs, I would have a glass and I'd play music because you're in the middle of nowhere. And the whole, you know, smartphone was a new thing, right? Having what Steve Jobs said, was 1,000 songs in your pocket. And so just you didn't have a speaker, you just needed your phone or your iPod, and you just put it in a cup and then it amplified the volume. And that's where the idea of Loud Bastard came.
Wow.
And yeah, when you're just a curious person, I guess you're exposed to different sectors and industries and people that if you were able to put all these pieces together, you kind of just find a way to materialize something.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I operate, I guess.
That's amazing. Now, I want to, just again, Loud Bastard, it was such a simple concept, but you know it was well thought of and well designed. So just for those people who don't know Loud Bastard, I'm feeling like an old fart saying this. It was a hollow bamboo. That's a giant bamboo towards the tip where you can literally shove your phone in, right? Mm-hmm. And it amplifies the thing. There's no electricity needed. You just need to put something on a loudspeaker. I remember doing several conference calls with my team using that thing.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Nice. I was like, just we couldn't hear shit. Loudspeakers back then were shit. Right? You can't even, you really need a Loud Bastard. You know, so simple, but the devil was in the details. It was so well designed and it sounded and it looked premium. Right? So
yeah.
I wanted to know what led you on, what were the skills you had to develop during the archaeology hustle or even prior to that, that allowed you to create such an amazing and beautifully yet simple product?
I think it was more of the curiosity of being in my curiosity, I think, is the main thing. Whether it's archaeology, design, learning e-commerce at the time, which was still new, right? Like I was going to do a podcast for Shopify. It was just starting because we launched our e-commerce on Shopify in the very beginnings of Shopify.
Wow.
It's just a curiosity. It wasn't archaeology per se. It was more about like being curious about other things and learning on your own and that attitude. So whether I'm digging something, you know, in the middle of nowhere or diving or helping design team, it had to be done well. I think it just had to be done well. And in order for things to be done well, I had to be well informed because I don't know what well is or what well was. And so using the internet to just teach and consume all this information, so then you know what the standard is, you know what kind of works, you know what people like. I think that's been the key here. So whether that's Loud Bastard or Bit2Me, it's being well informed by people and reading a lot. And that's right. I think that's been my key. Like I consume so much information on a daily basis.
And that's a good trait, which sometimes I'm scared for some of the founders that just take in surface level information or their own biases and they take action right away. Because again, we are the victim of our own instincts sometimes. Like, oh my God, I'm getting so excited. And then you jump the gun. You didn't really dig deep enough and spend time enough for you to really see the whole spectrum. Right. And exactly. That's what you've done. And again, it reflects on the type of stuff you've been able to do in Loud Bastard. But before we take our first break, I just want to understand because, again, you made so much hype on this thing. This was a coveted thing and I couldn't find it in stores. I got mine because IdeaSpace gave me one. Again, shout out to Miss Diane for sending me one from way back. Yeah. And I was so happy. That was a Christmas present. Like, shit, I got my own Loud Bastard finally. Walk me through how you grew this, because eventually, again, it went so big. How did that journey start and probably end?
I love how this started as a Bit2Me interview and then segued into Loud Bastard. Yep.
Now Bit2Me comes and the second part. We establish your roots first.
So I guess three main areas, right? Like first was the question was, how do we combine our love for music and doing something really cool that you know is straight out from the Philippines? You know, I was living abroad at the time before Loud Bastard. I was working as an archaeologist in Okinawa in Japan and in Guam.
Oh, wow.
So I left right after I graduated. I didn't even attend my own graduation.
Oh,
and when I came back to the Philippines, it was for the sole purpose of becoming an entrepreneur. Nice. So I left and said, I'll come back and then I'll get settled and then build something. And so with my co-founder at the time, we started with Loud Bastard with the sole purpose of combining beauty and design, natural material, which Cebu is, you know, as you may or may not know, people listening, is like the Milan of Asia, right? In terms of furniture design, you have Kenneth Vito, Selma. We live and breathe like furniture and design. And natural resources. And then combine that with our love of music. So how do you share your love of music? And you put one and two together. And I think it just that came out as the essence of what the product represented. Mm-hmm. And so whether that's a piece of bamboo or a piece of wood with speakers inside, which was the Loud Bastard hybrid that we came up after, the idea was how do you share your love for music easy and beautifully and represents like the country? And that's not necessarily just furniture, but a consumer product. So that was one. Yep. And we were able to create two products that were just solid. And then getting the word out was, you know, speaking with, you know, getting out there and talking about why we did it in the first place. So the story behind it, I think, was captivating also.
Absolutely.
Right. And because it was such a beautiful piece and graphic design and all the branding was executed well, the messaging, people resonated to that, right? Love for music, something beautiful, something natural. So just an easy to love product that many people picked up on. And because of its novelty, it became a good gift also. And it was
given
to people like you, right? People like A-list celebrities in the US, celebrities in the Philippines, obviously, also. And it became some type of like Filipino pride product that then other Filipinos gifted to others. And so that's kind of the viral effect. And to answer your question earlier, why you can't find it on stores is because as a handmade product and reading a lot about the rise of e-commerce and direct-to-consumer models, I thought that maybe we can't scale production for the product, because then it would just be, you know, we'd probably, the quality will go down as you try to scale production of a handmade product. So I did the numbers, like quick numbers. If we sold, for example, 50,000 units at this price direct to consumer, we would make X amount of money. If we made 100,000, you know, double the quantity, but at a lower price, because we had to sell to distributors and distributors had to have their margins, sell to the physical stores and the physical stores had to, you know, have their margins, we'd actually end up making less revenue selling 100,000 units than selling 50,000 units directly.
Wow.
And because it was a well-made product, we said, okay, let's set up a Shopify, because we didn't know how to code.
Yep.
Just to design and made it easy. And Shopify picked up on that. And Shopify messaged me, also wanted to do a podcast on that. So it was good. And so what we did was we shipped less product to the US and Japan and then sold it directly.
And around this time, 2012, 2016, e-commerce wasn't the mammoth that they are now, right? These were just like the starting blocks of how, like, around this time, Zalora, Lazada, Shopee, where Shopee wasn't even there here at that time. So for you to be that early in the game, and again, understand the essence of branding and whatnot, these are something that, again, just shows you how much you are a visionary and ahead of its time. And again, you have to be right in a lot of those bets early, because if you mess that up early on, it can go sideways early on pretty ugly as well.
Yeah. But
last question before we take our first break. What did you have to learn as an entrepreneur during this time? Because not everybody's gifted to do it well at their first try. I fucked up at my first try, right? And there's a lot of humble pie I had to eat, right? It's because of being young, or again, being impulsive. And I see that now as great building blocks of how I operate and how I became better as a person. But I needed that. What were those things for you that you had to learn, along with the mistakes that taught you how to learn those things?
This was before Loud Bastard, or this is during Loud Bastard?
During Loud Bastard.
Wow. So Loud Bastard for me was like a master's degree, man. I mean, and everything. It was really...
Your MBA.
Entrepreneurial, like before, like, yeah, like, I mean, in grade school, I'd sell candy to my classmates. In high school, I'd help my brother sell t-shirts.
Yep.
You know, so I've always kind of just... I love being an entrepreneur or business person. And Loud Bastard taught me a few very fundamental things that are the reason why I think I am where I am today. Mm-hmm. And that's that it is possible, and the best way to learn is to do. That's for sure. As an archaeologist, anthropologist, like, I literally learned a lot through iTunes University, through YouTube, through Coursera, and trying to be around people and asking their good people who've done it before and asking the right questions and reading like so much. I can tell you, I don't know how many biographies I've read or seen of successful entrepreneurs or successful athletes, even to see what their mind conditioning was like or is like, get me there. So that's one, just learning by doing. And then another one was to understand the fundamentals of business. Like, at the end of the day, like, you can have a good brand, you can have a good product and everything, but the business model, there are different concepts of the business model, and it's very important. Mm-hmm. And everything has to run efficiently. And I think that's one of the things that we were able to do well. And then the third one was also bootstrapping a company. Like, we didn't raise money for it, right? And I didn't even understand, like, when was the right time to raise money for it? Could it have been bigger as a brand if, you know, we had decided to raise some type of financial round and then put a price on the equity? And so we didn't do that. And as we closed up shop and left, that kind of saw our equity value, I think, not hit its potential. And so... Mm-hmm. I didn't pay attention a lot of attention on the equity side and investor value, because we didn't really have any, right?
Yeah.
It was just, and so graduating from kind of like a mom and pop structure that's behind like such a known brand and product, that taught me a lot right now. So I tend to try to look at all three things and everything else that follows with it. Post Loud Bastard, and I think I'm doing a good job in that now. So it's a lot of moving parts to a business, and you can't do it alone. And you have to constantly learn and do and back it up and make mistakes. Learn from your mistakes immediately and surround yourself with really, really good people. Because I think at the end, a lot of mistakes are taken. Human capital is so important. And before, I used to have more impulsive decisions like I like this person. I get along with this person. Yeah, let's come work with us. That's not exactly enough anymore. But obviously, you need the balance of I resonate with this person,
right,
and they have the soft and hard skills. Before, it was just, right, you know, kind of wild. So, but I
totally agree.
Yeah,
I made the same mistakes before.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh shoot, I vibe with this person, and then, oh my god, we do not have the same work ethic.
Yeah.
That's a major deal breaker, and that's just gonna create more of friction and then a lot of the, you know, conflicts down the road.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess that's the thing. Like, so much mistakes, man. Until now, there's so much mistakes that one can do, and then I guess realizing that you can never figure it out. There's no kind of, I read, it's
trial and error all the time.
Yeah. Have you seen Jiro Loves Sushi on Netflix?
No.
The sushi chef.
Jiro Loves Sushi. Okay, I'll check that out.
Dreams
right
of
after
Sushi.
This.
Sorry, Jiro Dreams of Sushi. So he's really cool. He has this thing. It says like he dreams about sushi, of making the perfect sushi, right? And he said basically, there's no such thing as a perfect sushi. If you try to be a perfectionist, that means you're putting like a ceiling on your growth.
Right.
And I love that. So accepting the fact that life isn't fair. So play with the hands you're dealt with, and knowing that you have to keep working on improving every single day, right? Continuous improvement. But knowing there's no ceiling to that, then you're like, that's great. You know, you're just liberated from that pressure.
Absolutely. And you just throw your best and then stack it up all the time. All right, yeah. Now let's take our first break, and when we come back, let's now discuss how he was able to then go from Loud Bastard and the next hustles after that, all the way to what we did this episode for, which is Bit to Me. Well, let's talk about that more after the break.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey guys, I have a very, very exciting opportunity I want to share with you guys. If you're a B2B startup founder, listen up. Your ticket to growth is here. Introducing Impact 24, the Philippines' largest B2B SaaS challenge. Calling all startups in their pre-launch, pre-seed, or seed stages, this is your chance to accelerate your growth. Submit your pitch to Impact 24 and get ready for a 10-week intensive program to elevate your solution. What's in it for you? How about up to 500,000 pesos in MVP project support, exclusive credits from industry partners, personalized mentoring, and a shot to pitch at SaaSCon PH, the country's biggest SaaS conference this April. But yo, you gotta hurry up because submissions close on January 26, 2024 already. Don't miss out on this opportunity to take your startup to new heights. Apply now at saaschallenge.ph. That's saaschallenge.ph. And good luck, and I'll see you guys in Impact 24. And we're back in the break. We are still with Ko Honozawa again, who told us the amazing hustle of such a... Now it's more valuable. I got to find my Loud Bastard, wherever it is. I think it's in Well, because we moved houses and I still remember having that teal one. It's in my room for a long time. Like, I hope I can still find it, but I'm pretty sure it's here in this house. I just don't know where it is. But man, that is an amazing backstory. But now I want to understand, from Cebu, how did you go all the way to Spain, and how did that lead you, after everything that you've learned in Loud Bastard, into being in crypto? Because there, crypto 2013, 2014, 2015, all the talk was Bitcoin, ETH. That's it.
Yeah, that's it.
Right? Blockchain, there is a little bit of talk about it, but it's not. It's people, half of the 90% of the people that says blockchain didn't know shit about what they're talking about, right? How did you get into the rabbit hole early in crypto, and how did you get to Spain? I want to understand how that happened.
So one thing led to another, again, like what we were saying earlier, right? When you let your curiosity kind of take you there. Loud Bastard opened up my world into tech, e-commerce.
Yeah.
But e-commerce was just incredible. And not just as a direct consumer model, but the apps and mini apps you can build on top of your e-commerce to make it better. Automation, yep. Automation of newsletters, automation of or back dashboard, you know, backend analytics of your customer journey, net promoter scores of the friend. Like, it's just like, wow, you know, like heat maps of your store. I thought it was so cool. And so I researched more about those Shopify apps. In their marketplace, and discovered that there's a new business model here, which is SaaS, subscription, software as a service, and kind of that was the rabbit hole that got me into. Just I said, you know, I'm done with hardware or this for now, and I'm just gonna go full on software, recurring revenue,
MRR,
ARR, right? Customer success. Upselling, cross-selling. These were so cool, highly scalable product that, you know, the only thing you're paying more, once you have product market fit, the only thing you need is to buy more server space. But the product is made. So it's the same thing. One person uses it or a million people uses it, apart from servers that you need to, you know,
right,
grow. So that led me into wanting to know more about it. And at the time when we, part of Loud Bastard, we had opened a US office, and I spent a lot of time in Los Angeles. And
wow,
I realized that it wasn't my time to stay in the Philippines.
La La Land.
Yeah.
Ah, all right, in the Philippines. All right.
Yeah. So I decided to stay where the action is. And fortunately, at the time, you know, startup seed in the Philippines was none, I would say.
Yep. There are some very nascent, but man, there's just I'd say 90% clueless founders like we are, right? And then we'll celebrate a $50,000 investment. That was already a big win for the ecosystem.
Yeah, unfortunately, it was just starting, you know. So there wasn't like high risk investors coming in yet, or angels. Angels normally would come from successful founders, right? That had exits, and then they would invest back into the ecosystem. So it was still very nascent. And so being in the US opened my mind and my world. But I did, after a few like years going back and forth, I wanted to really settle down elsewhere. And Europe was a place where I really wanted to be in. It was, in Europe, it wasn't as advanced as the US, but I felt like it was a great opportunity for me to start over in a country where I can get to know, you know, my grandfather and my mom's side of the family more, establish more roots there, and get just, you know, just kind of see what I want to do and get to know that side of my family more. But at the same time, be in a continent where there was a startup scene, it was just starting. There was already investments. There was, you know, there wasn't a unicorn in Spain yet, but there was so much potential. There were already high valuations and, you know, there were conferences happening that were really cool. And so I was like, okay, let's move to Spain and see what happens. And I did. So I went to Spain in end of 2016, 2017. And I've been here since.
Right. At that point, again, just stupid, very first thing, how good was your Spanish in doing this?
Terrible.
Because it starts with that. How can you even do everything else? How did you, again, you're naturally curious about culture. So obviously you're going to put in the time and the work to get better. But how was that first stumbling block? Because everything else just follows after that.
You know,
right?
I used as a foreigner, it's kind of your advantage. Like, I don't see things as like a handicap. Like, yeah, I'm in Spain. I'm, you know, Japanese Filipino, but I speak English. I don't see how that's a bad thing. So I come in, I Googled startup scene in Madrid, literally, and then ended up the LinkedIn looking at the LinkedIn of Nacho Mateo. If you're listening to this, is
yep.
First person. Mm-hmm. Now he's the, you know, president of the largest Spanish startup conference in Southern Europe, South Summit.
Wow.
You know, and I went to his office, spoke to him in English, and then I said, look, this is my background and I don't speak Spanish, but I want to get to know the scene here. And he and I just moved to Madrid. And so he gave me a list. Go to Google for startups. Like, oh wow, there's a Google for startups. And
right.
Number one. Number two, there's a Google for startups here. So okay. I went there, got to know other founders, and then went to this thing called, you know, other accelerators and incubators. And it was just such a vibrant scene that I fell in love with. Mm-hmm. And I didn't need Spanish. Everybody spoke, wow. All the kind of founders appreciated, you know, me as a, like a foreigner entrepreneur coming in, being curious about wanting to know the scene and wanting to start something here. Eventually learned Spanish, obviously, fell in love. So that helped with a Spanish lady. So that helped
nice.
A lot. And, you know, one thing
amazing.
Led to another. One thing led to another. And
excelente. There
yeah,
you go.
Yeah. So that was a great investment in hindsight, because a lot of these founders and friends that I've met before are now extremely successful founders with
got it.
On their second or third company. And one of those founders that I met introduced me to Bitcoin and ETH. And that's where the crypto journey started.
Now, again, ecosystems are built by founders. Again, it's the best startup ecosystems are built by founders. Before we talk about Bit2Me, can you just describe a bit how the founder quality was like when you got to Spain or Madrid, at least, right? Because I look at the Philippines now, and again, the types of founders that existed. So I've been here since 2012.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen the nascency, or it's like, oh my God, this is, you know, nobody, it was just us. It was just first landing on the moon. We don't even know what's going on, right?
Yeah.
We were trying, it was a lot of fish out of water experience. But now, you see a lot of experienced founders trying to give it back,
yeah.
Not just through mentorship, but they also literally invest.
Yeah.
They pay it forward.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? But that took 7, 8, 10 years
yeah.
to happen. When you came there, what was the founder scene like? And what was the buzz in the air? And again, is that crypto? What was it like?
In Spain, or particularly in Madrid, but when I moved here and got involved, it was such an awesome ecosystem. Very small, very tight knit, but
everybody knew everybody.
Everybody knew everybody, and very high ambition founders. And it was so interesting to learn about this whole new world, which is the Hispanic world. You know, like when you launch in Spain, I would think you would expand into France and then Italy and then Germany and to Europe. But no, yes, of course,
Latin America. But
predominantly, they would go straight to Miami as their backdoor into Latin America.
Oh,
and launch in LATAM, which makes total sense, right? Like the whole Spanish speaking world is so massive.
Yep.
And so,
that's a whole continent in itself, except yeah, Brazil.
It's an entire right? like business demographic. Mm. It was so interesting to learn that. And so investments, VCs, you know, they were still not as mature as compared to the US, but there were successful Spanish-born co-founders or Spanish-born executives in the US that came back and invested back. So that was very helpful. And some founders, you know, eventually just copy-pasted what worked in the US, like Glovo, who became a unicorn. Cabify is the Uber of the Spanish world, also a unicorn. You know, they just they just did this thing, and it was just fascinating to watch from like the sidelines, you know. And a lot of the friends of mine that I've met when in that first year, like they've sold their businesses last year, this year, 2 years ago, and now they're doing another one, or they're setting up their family office or a farm.
Wow.
It's so cool to see, and it's so cool to live. And I guess that's one of the reasons why I'm still here. Like I got, it was just the right, that intuition of like, I want to be in Europe because it's just about to pop, you know, it was just about to, the rocket Absolutely. Was just about to launch.
Right. Whereas, and you want to be there when it does take off.
Yeah. Whereas the US was already very, very mature.
Yep.
I don't know what it would be like if I had stayed, but thankfully I
Southeast Asia and the Philippines were just still building the spaceship, but there's already at least a spaceship.
Yeah. Yeah. Southeast Asia is insane now. Like, it's so nice to see. I know some founders in crypto space in the Philippines who have, you know, YGG's founder, Gabby Dizon.
Yep, Gabby.
Like, he is amazing. You know, what he's able to have done without even leaving the Philippines, that's very admirable. So, shout out to Gabby. Yeah.
And the persistent, too.
Yeah.
Dude, he had a rough stretch before YGG. And again, if you're curious about how Gabby was able to do that, we've had him couple of years ago, I think mid-2021, right? So check it out, the hustle behind YGG. I knew Gabby as a game developer.
Yeah.
That's what his essence is. That's what's his love. And he had to go through rough stretches until he got the one.
Yeah.
And look at him now, YGG. But I'll just circle back with you, Cole. I want to understand now, how did crypto become the one that you had to choose? Because being exposed to all these founders, you literally can cherry pick. There's a lot of problems that were going to be solved, but what drew you into crypto and how did you then double down and how did that turn into Bit2Me?
Okay, so when I got in, when Bit2Me asked me to get an advisory role, it was a bear market. It was kind of the last stretch of the crypto winter. The previous one, not this one right now.
Okay. Which one?
Yeah. And well, the one thing I fell in love with crypto is not necessarily cryptocurrency. It was because I've seen, you know, cryptocurrency use cases like remittance for the Philippines and all these things, right, that are just much better. But I love the technology, like the Web3, I think was the best rebranding exercise for crypto. People calling it now Web3, I think that's amazing. And it's true though, like the new internet and just that you can be a part of building the future with people that are so passionate about Web3, this new internet, where it's an ownership economy, right? So when I was introduced to ETH and Ethereum, you kind of study it a little bit more and you realize like, oh my God, like one use case, for example, that was shown back in 2016 was using the blockchain, you can track provenance of a product, right? Where does that fish come from? Who caught it? What day? Where? You know, and if you use the blockchain in the supply chain, you're able to record that on the
paper trail everywhere.
Yeah. And so you can really see. And that's just one application. And that for me blew my mind.
Right.
And then there was the whole concept about ownership, right?
Yep.
It's yours. Like Bitcoin is yours. And if you use that same technology on other assets or tokenized versions of physical assets, that's like yours, like
NFTs and everything,
that's yours, right? And that for me was so exciting, combined with the community that I've gotten to meet in the Web3 space. People like Gabby, people, you know, like Luis Quende, who founded Aragon, who's also here from Spain, from Madrid. You know, he was building DAOs before DAO was even a thing. 2016 DAO, like what was that, right? So that was such an exciting thing for me because I really liked the people, the ones who were really building. They weren't launching tokens. They were building things and trying to push adoption. So when I met the founders of Bit2Me, Andre told me one day, he said, I want my children to open up a wallet, not a bank account.
Okay. Now, and that's the case. So a wallet, right? How do you then build this? Because again, one of the very first challenges around early on in the game are builders. They're very scarce. It's hard to get people that knew how to code this thing. You're going to have to build them long term and whatnot. But how did you start building the product to how it was? If you came in at around 30 people, right? That's still not enough to get it where it's supposed to be. How did that journey begin?
as a founder and a product-centric person, visionary and a genius, you know. So him having a product roadmap that is basically creating a complete suite of crypto adoption products that both institutions and retail people like you and me would use.
Yes.
It now it's not just a wallet. It is the whole thing now, right? It's being able to have the easiest way to buy and sell and swap crypto. It's the easiest way to launch or participate in a token launch. It's the easiest way to stake your crypto that are proof of stake to get yield.
Yep.
The easiest way also when we appify the whole thing, it's the easiest way for neobanks and banks to then safely offer crypto through our infrastructure. And on top of all of that,
right,
having a Spanish first academy that's free and paid for everybody to learn about this new technology. And then you have Andre, who's the co-founder, equally just as brilliant and genius, who was able to really work with Leif and capture like their right and close their right partnerships, hire the right people, making sure everything was working smoothly on the business front, compliance front. We've always been doing things compliant. We've always been compliant in this. And then, you know, to the detriment of user growth, our KYC, you know your customer, anti-money laundering processes are very, very, very strict. In those, within those 30 people, almost half were are legal and compliance from banks. Right?
Wow. At the time.
So that's why we were the first crypto company to be registered by the Bank of Spain for crypto brokerage and custody.
Amazing.
We were the, right, you know, the government of Spain uses us to off-ramp embargoed Bitcoin. You know, banks are already integrating our infrastructure so that when the bull run comes back, you know, they're well positioned to be able to offer crypto brokerage while we will be their custodians.
That's amazing.
And we were just invested by Telefonica, probably virtually the largest telco in the world.
What?
They own Movistar.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And they'll be, we will be distributing our Web3 MBA to all of their employees and partners. We will be connecting our API to their neobanks in Brazil. Vivo Pay has over 50 million users.
Oh,
Movistar,
God,
alone has more than 200 million users all over the world, plus O2.
Right.
They have a Web3 strategy, and it's powered by us now. So this is how we're going to dominate the Spanish-speaking market through probably one of the largest Spanish, you know, company on the planet. So we're very excited for what's to come. And given the winter right now, it's just crypto winter in terms of, you know, it's like a big cleanup. And
yep,
those people that have been able to do things correctly will stay. And we're happy to be one of those people. So, you know, Telefonica could have invested in any other player, right? Or the Bank of Spain,
right,
could have used any other player as well. But I think it's a further validation that we're doing things right, because they invest in us and they use us and the banks are using us. We're domiciled here in Spain and not some random...
some Caribbean or what, Mediterranean island.
Yes. Yeah, so,
right.
So so adoption needs, you know, maybe super crypto natives won't like how centralized we are, after recent events, I think it's more appreciated now.
Absolutely. You want to make sure that there's really legs into whatever your crypto investments.
Yeah, and look at CoinsBH. Wei, the new CEO, is a good friend.
Yeah.
You know, he's doing things really, really, really well. Hopefully we can, there's collaboration that will come up with Team Coins and Bit2Me so we can bridge the Filipino-Spanish market.
Absolutely. Just like the galleon trade of old. There you
exactly,
go.
Exactly, right. Yeah, the galleon trade of old.
All right. But I want to understand from an operations standpoint, you come in at 30 employees. How did your hustle evolve in the day-to-day? And what are the things you had to really, you know, put forth to make sure that, again, Bit2Me gets where it is today? Because again, that everything that you just said, told us, does not happen overnight. There's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears.
So,
right? And a lot of tapas and churros in between. But how did that evolve from your point of view in terms of being again, an advisor all the way to becoming a co-CEO?
So a lot of hard work and some luck, for sure. Okay. But the luck, hard work made us well positioned to take advantage of luck. So from 30 people, we've worked so hard to get there. No investments, all bootstrapped.
And wow,
we said, okay, I came in and they said, let's do a growth strategy and kind of like an expansion strategy and based on the product roadmap. And so it was a lot of strategizing and then deciding whether or not it was worth doing an investment round where we would sell some equities to some strategic investors. We spoke to a few funds here in Spain. They didn't want anything to do with crypto. Even the bank venture guys, they were just like, no, crypto, no, Web3, nothing, don't care. So like, all right, well, spoke to some guys, my contacts in the US, they seem really interested, more open to it. But then the bull run started and things got really exciting. So our brokerage business became really, we started, you know, seeing an increase of users, our brokerage transaction volume, you know, exponentially grew as it does when in a bull run. And so we said, okay, we have about 90,000 users, registered users now for Shadow Bull Run. Let's design a utility token around our suite of products that we are now building, wherein this utility token will grant you certain discounts, priorities, and other perks that we will be designing as we build the product line, right? Now everything's built. We have a MasterCard, we have Earn, we have, you know, all these really cool products that the token is in the middle of. But at the time, the vision was, let's put the token as a nexo to give you the best products that we are going to build. And when we started like writing the white paper and opened a Telegram account, share this with our users, our users were very happy about it and they were very excited about it. So they said, you know what, let's just do an ICO. And so all these guys that we were talking to, these investors who are crypto investors, you know, we were able to raise 3 million euros pretty quickly in a private sale. And then doing a public sale on our utility token on our own platform. So we had to build our own launchpad so that only our users would buy it. And so they would go through all of the KYC, AML. They would all be clean money. They'd go through all of the identification processes, right? So that it was legit and clean. And the regulators here in Spain, we spoke to them. They had no idea what we were talking about. But you know, we'd explain to them everything and how this is a utility token. And so they said, "Okay, this is not a security. So we don't know what a utility is, but that's not definitely not a security. So okay, we got audit. We hired some third party auditors, and had a roadmap, had a dream, and eventually." In 100 seconds, filled up the token sale, oversubscription, and raised 17.5 million euros.
That is crazy. Oh my goodness. Woo. That's the thing. That's amazing. And again, this is how ICOs were supposed to be done. But again, you said luck came into play because I also knew several people. Again, Gabby is one of them, I think, during this stretch run. Who's trying to do ICOs, but wasn't as fortunate as you guys did. What are the things that you think you got, you did right at the right timing or you were lucky with? Yeah. Because a lot of them also weren't as fortunate.
For us, being a centralized and regulated company domiciled here in Spain with a track record that's revenue generating, we were profitable. That's really
nice.
Like you're going to try it. We weren't necessarily a super young startup that had to prove that we can
a moonshot or whatever.
Yeah, we've already demonstrated what we can do, right? We were a profitable company, and this utility token was our way of bringing in the community into using our products more. And so that's one. I think it gave you the security. We had also brought in advisors into the company that are very top notch. So one of them is Zeeshan Feroz, who's the ex CEO of Coinbase UK and Coinbase Europe.
Ooh,
the person who opened Coinbase in Europe and the UK for Coinbase. So he still sits as an advisor for us. Raul, who is also Kraken, head of Kraken in Iberia, ex-head of Kraken in Iberia. We had Baldomero Falcon, who's just the ex-global president of MasterCard and ex-Santander.
Oh my God.
And then our team. And so when you looked at who we are and we did live videos on YouTube and showing who we are and why we believe in this company, that helped a lot, accompanied by a bull market where crypto sentiment was quite high. We went from 90,000 users to 600,000 users.
Oh, and raised, my goodness.
And raised to 20 million over the summer. So
that is fucking crazy.
So yeah, it was a lot of hard work, obviously. Yeah. Like, I mean, it seems like we raised everything in 100 seconds, but no, I mean, behind those 100 seconds, 100,000 hours of,
it's a lot of prep work.
Number it is. Yeah. Of just like sleepless nights and all of that. So eventually that was good. So we realized that we built our own launchpad. So now we can offer our launchpad to other companies. So for example, the largest neobank in Spain launched their own utility token earlier this year, raised 8 million on our launchpad. So that's a new business unit for us. You know, we our partnership in MasterCard is growing. So we have a MasterCard. You can pay with your virtual card on your phone or your physical card. Straight crypto, you don't have to swap it into euros. You just, whatever crypto you have, you pay, and then we'll swap it directly as you pay, and the merchant receives euros directly. And even get cashbacks and with our cashbacks through our token. We have a Web3 MBA now, right? So a lot of these courses that about blockchain and Web3 that the reason why I got into it and the reason why the founders got into it is all through education, right? We didn't learn this in school.
Yep.
And so formal universities right now, like Universidad Europea, Universidad de Murcia, like these public universities, they don't have this curriculum. So, but now, soon you're going to be able to do our Web3 MBA online course, which is like Netflix style. You watch it when you do it, when you can. You will get credits from universities for doing this. And so we're trying to build the pie and so more people get into this industry. And we're constantly innovating. One of the things that my conversation with Gabby when I saw him a few months ago in Barcelona was this soulbound token. So we talked about giving back, right? I think we touched on this before the interview. And what I liked about a conversation with Gabby, which we're implementing now, is the technology called soulbound tokens, SBTs. These are basically like NFTs, but you cannot transfer ownership. It's yours. And so that is a technology that can be used for your digital identity. Who you are,
right.
So if we use that technology applied into our academy, we can now make something called a Web3 CV resume. So as you go through our courses that are both free and paid, we will issue you soulbound tokens as a way to certify that you indeed learned this, you know, block or this topic, whether that's about the metaverse, Bitcoin, or tokenomics or anything like that. And what that allows everybody in the Spanish-speaking world for now is that all your online learning will actually reflect as your digital identity and curriculum, CV. So you can then get jobs in the industry.
Yep.
And more talented people in the industry, more innovation, more adoption, and we're all happy, right? So can you imagine what I was telling you about when we started Loud Bastard? Like, I was learning all this stuff online. So I have those online courses to thank as to why I have this foundation of knowledge, right? But I never got, like, I can't put that in a CV. Who's going to believe me that I know more about SaaS than the guy next to me because I read more and I studied more, right?
Correct.
Because I didn't go to university to study SaaS. But so it all came down to just implementation. But now with Web3 CV and our Web3 courses and our academy that's free also, and the technology behind it that will show you that you indeed learned all of this, other Web3 companies or crypto companies will look at that and be like, oh, wow, okay, yeah, that's definitely you. That your wallet says that you've done all of these courses in Bit2Me, so you know what you're saying. We believe you. So, okay, you can get this job. We have a job opening for this, and that. And it doesn't have to be Web3 companies. It could be traditional companies with a Web3 strategy, just like Telefonica.
That's amazing. All right, last question before we take our last break. I mean, yes, did an amazing run through the stretch, but not everybody gets it perfect. You mentioned it before. There are a lot of mistakes. Were there near-death experiences or were there heavy punches you had to take? And
with those, what were the biggest learnings you got?
Yeah. Oh man. Near death for the company. There's been a few, not as much, thankfully. I think it was, you know, how this year was just all about growth. We hired a lot of people, a lot, and we risked the company a little bit because we were profitable, and we risked the company a little bit by spending more and going on growth mode. You know, typical company, typical like growth mode that you see in tech startups where you're just burning cash. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, you know, well, after the whole Luna crash and FTX saga, where it's happening now, Telefonica, the investment from them came later than expected. And it was a tad bit late. Jeez. And so we had to make an executive decision to act now and not risk it further. So, you know, that was a hard one for us because we had to really restructure the company. And what we've learned from that was, thank God we have that bootstrap mentality or DNA.
Yeah, we've been there before too.
Yeah. So we're fine. We're good. We're healthy now. But these are hard decisions sometimes, right? Like,
right.
And yeah, thankfully we didn't have a lot of near death experiences, but we make mistakes, man. Like there's so many mistakes. You know, we hire the wrong people, or we ourselves in management should have reviewed better certain budgets for marketing or stuff like that. But thankfully we have such a good compliance team that we've always done things right for our users. Right. At the end of the day, those are the most important, because once they lose trust in you, they all leave. And for now, that's not happening. So we're doing something right.
That's amazing. All right. Now let's take our last break. And when we come back, let's now just pay it forward and talk about Web3 and the immediate future that it's going to be. Because again, this is not going to stop. This is going to be the next ship that everybody will be hopping on. But I want to know more from Ko's point of view. Well, let's talk about that more after a break. Hey Hustlers, it's time to talk business once again, and we're excited to share a bit more info about our sponsor, Sprout Solutions. And again, just like what I said at the start of the episode, you should check out Sprout's Payroll Starter as you grow your own startup. Because this bundle that they have is literally what you need to take your startup to the next level as you grow your employees. And this bundle is your key to freedom, including payroll outsourcing to experts, a subscription to timekeeping and attendance software, and government compliance services. Sprout's Payroll Starter has you covered for payroll, BIR, SSS, and taxes. All the stuff that no founder loves to do. So let Sprout handle the busy work and say goodbye to lines and tax payment stress. All this for as low as 5,000 pesos. Again, that's just 5,000 pesos all in for your payroll and HR needs. So visit sprout.ph payroll-starter-monthly-5k, or again, just click the link in the description box of this episode to elevate your business management game. And again, big thank you to Sprout Solutions, liberating your time for what truly matters. Hey Hustlers, wish there was an easy way to open a bank account and grow your money without the hassle of lengthy application process and income documents? Well, I got good news, because today's sponsor, Uno Digital Bank, is here to help you achieve your financial goals. You can easily open an account with the Uno app in just 5 minutes and one valid ID. And as one of the 6 digital banks licensed by the Banco Central ng Pilipinas, the company is committed to providing customers with simpler, better, and more accessible banking. Last year, Uno Bank was recognized by the Asia Banking and Finance Awards and bagged the title Open Banking Initiative of the Year due to the success of its partnership with GCash, one of the Philippines' leading mobile wallet platforms. And with the Uno mobile app, you can access an hashtag Uno Ready Savings account and enjoy daily interest crediting. With their hashtag Uno Earn or hashtag Uno Boost Time Deposit accounts, you can enjoy a high interest rate of up to 6.5% per annum. Enjoy monthly payouts with hashtag Uno Earn and flexible tenors with hashtag Uno Boost. Other app features include pay bills, the Uno Virtual Debit MasterCard, life insurance, scan and pay with QRPH, and phones. And the one thing that I really love about Uno Digital Bank is they're open to collaborate with a lot of Filipino startups. I've had a chance to see the partnerships that they've had lined up with the startups that they have, and it's truly exciting to see how a digital bank like Uno can enable startups to unlock the power of fintech through digital banking. So if you're ready to elevate your banking experience, download the Uno mobile app today from the Google Play Store or App Store. Or if you want to collaborate with them, I'll be happy to give you an intro. Just shoot us an email at hello@huffleshare.com. Hey Hustlers, I hope you're having a great 2024 so far. As you know, a lot of startups had a very challenging 2023, and hopefully things are going to do better this year for a lot of us. Not just because it's the year of the dragon, but also because our sponsor DragonPay is here to help your startups process payments in the most efficient way. Established in 2010, DragonPay empowers businesses of all sizes to accept and disperse payments through secure and convenient channels, giving your customers the flexibility to choose the payment method that suits them best. With over 85 partner channels, 35,000 partner branches nationwide, including QRPH, e-wallets, crypto, buy now, pay later, and many more. They also process an astonishing 15 million transactions processed globally each month. DragonPay is your trusted choice for online payments. And here's something to show you how legit DragonPay is. DragonPay was named FinTech of the Year at last year's Philippine FinTech Festival in 2023. So let's make 2024 extra prosperous for you and your startup in this year of the dragon. For more details, head on over to dragonpay.ph. That's dragonpay.ph. Trust the pioneer. Trust DragonPay. Hey Hustlers, before we start this episode, I want to share with you this amazing tool that we started using in Podcast Network Asia and PodMachine lately, and it's called Narrator.ai. Now, prior to using Narrator, one of our biggest problems in our startup was centralizing the tons of data that we have from all our podcasts and how users were using our product. We had so much data. The problem was we didn't have the right tool to interpret and make decisions fast out of them. Now, this meant we did a lot of risky guessing, which thankfully we got right, but we were a bad move away from screwing it all up. Now, instead of hiring a whole data team or building this whole thing from the ground up, we were lucky to find Narrator. Because as a startup, you need a tool that allows you to make the necessary pivots needed to scale up with your data that you can use to make great decisions fast. And Narrator is the fastest, easiest, and the most comprehensive way to get value out of your data warehouse. No more need for hundreds of rigid data models that take forever to update and can only handle a limited number of use cases. Using Narrator's activity schema, explore and analyze any data in your warehouse without having to write SQL. And I swear, if you're a startup that's scaling or a company that's undergoing digital transformation, this will blow you away. So all you have to do is go to narrator.ai and book a demo. Trust us, this is awesome. And we're back from the break. We are still with Go Anzao and told us the amazing hustle they did with Bit2Me. And again, very, very proud as a fellow Bisaya. I'm very proud of you, my man. My roots come from Samar. So, yeah, so there. So I'm just in the east side. You're in the central side.
My Lola is actually from Tacloban.
Oh, nice. All right. So it's Waray. Okay. So that's what it is. All right. So one of the things that I really want to understand, because Web3 and Metaverse just pop out of nowhere, but I've seen the transition. You said crypto was a initial iteration, then blockchain. There are, again, winters that happen. There are massive horror stories like what happened over the past couple of weeks and months. But there are you guys who are legit and continue to, you know, build the real foundation where people can, you know, launch off of that, weather these storms. But here's my big million-dollar question. And this is me coming in because I haven't really jumped full-on into Web3. I'm just hovering. I'm looking from afar, but there's so much hype. And with hype, sometimes the scary part is you can't distinguish, especially if you're a newcomer, you can't distinguish
the charlatans from the real hustlers.
Yeah.
Can you just walk us through how do you know the real builders and the ones that are out here, not just to jump in the hype, but are actually building something worthwhile?
That's a really tough question now, considering of what happened with FTX, where SBF basically pulled everybody. Right? The man pulled, yes. I mean, well, a few months ago, you would be like, this guy's the darling of the industry. So he fooled us all, right? So it's very difficult to figure that out, because I think as a business, like FTX as an exchange is very necessary. Like their role that they're played is similar to ours, right? We are your onboard, your on-ramp into this space.
Yep.
A safe and regulated on-ramp. But then you have lack of governance and management, basically fraudulent actions from this man. That's fooled us all. So it's really difficult, I think, to sift through that dirt. But I guess I'm going to try to answer this as best as I can, but not, you know.
Take it with a grain of salt, yeah, I guess, because we don't know.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, like what we say in the industry, do your own research, right? But
right.
The thing, my takeaway from this is, you have, for one part, you have the business, right? The business itself. And when you look at a business, in whether that's a protocol with its own token or an exchange like FTX or Bit2Me, you want to make sure that you know who the founders are. You want to make sure that business 101, right? That the business is actually creating value and reaping like revenues from the value that they create. Number one. So when you have a token or a company where their business model is just the token, I'd be worried of that. And you want to see and make sure that you understand exactly what they're trying to build or what they've built and where they play into that, right? Into the whole scene. And so do they have, like, again, like if, at the end of the day, whether it's Web3 or Web2 or whatever,
fundamentals. Supply.
Are you creating value and are you getting paid for that? Correct. I think that's number one. And then number two is now that we've learned from what happened with FTX, is governance, right? Like now we know that certain top tier funds backing certain companies does not necessarily mean it could be run to the ground or not, right? Sequoia backed FTX, right, and all these big guys. And now we see that there was a lack of governance from these funds who probably weren't able to take a board seat and help and get a better view on what was really happening behind the scenes. So when you try to as an investor or as a if you're investing into a company like this, then you want to know really like how is it governed, who is behind them, and just to make sure that you can try as best as you can to separate the noise and the real builders. And obviously if these builders have built things before and have really showed that they can give this value. So those are the main two things. Like it's really hard these days, right? You have all these named funds from the US that you would think like, okay, there's social proof to this project, so I'm not going to look further. But we don't know what happened before.
DBTH, yeah. Don't buy the hype, right? Do your own research also, right? Yes, again, track record tells everything. This goes to show that, again, just like you were able to then do Loud Bastard pretty well. So this is something that's pretty transparent and well out there. But next question I wanted to ask, with all the hype that's in Web3 now and everyone that really wants to build on this ecosystem, because again, there's already massive traction and massive foundation that can be built. It's not, we're not starting from 0 to 1 mm-hmm. anymore. Right? What excites you the most, especially in the realm of what you guys are doing in Bit2Me, right? What's coming up?
So you mentioned, I think there's two part question there. So what excites me the most first is the technology in itself, right? The different applications and real world use cases. So what will excite me the most is that when the end consumer is able to really interact with a product that's become exponentially better. And under the hood is all Web3 stuff or a mix of Web3 and Web2 stuff.
Wow.
Right? You don't even know like that. That's what's happening. That's what excites me the most, because it's like my good friend Richard made a good analysis on the Steam engine. Back in the day, you had the inventor of the Steam engine, right? And that person didn't necessarily reap all of the value, you know, from or generate as much revenue, for example, for selling steam engines. But you know who made a lot of money and created a lot of value for with that steam engine? There were the railway companies that put the steam engine on a train or steam engine on a boat and yep. created this whole, you know, logistical web of being able to fast, you know, transfer goods from one place to another much faster and much more efficient. And those are this is yep. a good example, Web3 being that steam engine and finding these entrepreneurs, investing in those entrepreneurs and supporting them also as a user. Those are the ones that are building really, really, really good products with this new technology that allows them to create these new products. You know, because before, when you're limited with the technology, you can only create a certain type of product, right? And now that we have this whole Web3 ownership, decentralization, tokenization type of technology, how can an entrepreneur put all those pieces together to create the best product for the end user that's better than the one that they were previously using? So I'm so excited about that because it can be applied into so many industries, you know, telco, fintech. It's not just about buying Bitcoin and selling Bitcoin. It's the art, right? Everything. And what excites me the most of it to me in that space is because we are the on-ramp and off-ramp for all this digital economy.
Right.
If you talk about crypto now, it's less about cryptocurrency. It's more about digital assets, whether that's a tokenized real estate or NFTs or SBTs or ETH and Bitcoin. We are your kind of digital asset company that allows the user to go from the real world to the digital world that's regulated and safe and secure, right? And whether we're doing that directly through our Bit2Me suite of products or we're doing that through our APIs that are powering the other companies that are building on top of our API and infrastructure, I'm so excited about that role of just enabling this. Yeah. And our education piece, obviously, so that we can create more people, create more help. Hopefully some of our educational stuff will inspire people to work in a company that's in Web3 and eventually become entrepreneurs. Or our more advanced courses like the MBA would then teach an entrepreneur in the SaaS space to venture into Web3 and build a product.
Right.
So I'm super excited
about
that.
So you can keep building.
Yeah.
And get that steam engine everywhere now.
Get that steam engine everywhere and then educate everybody about the steam engine so that they can build their own railway systems.
Absolutely. All right. Last question. So again, you've talked about paying it forward, whether here or anywhere else in the world, but you've also been an investor, right? And now you're in the position to really pay it forward. When you decide to invest in a company, what do you look for in terms of the fundamentals before you write a check?
I guess it depends which stage. So if it's an early stage, the reality is like you can really believe in the vision and really believe on everything on their promises. But if it's an early stage company that hasn't demonstrated any traction, you're really betting on the horse, right? Or the jockey, but you're betting on the founders. So that's the first thing, I guess, like, because the company will have, you know, I learned this from experience, the company will have to pivot many times until you get product market fit.
Absolutely.
And a real, a credible founder is who you would want to back when they're back, you know, when they're back against the wall and they can execute. So for me, at least, that's been my way. If it's more of like a growth stage startup, then obviously it's more about metrics, right? You know, how much of what money's for, what have you demonstrated, how you used your funds before and how are you going to use these funds now and what the exit strategy is. So pretty like basic financial transaction type of investment. And then the early stage is really the more exciting part. Risky though, but yeah.
Yep. All right. Again, thank you so much. That was such an amazing season finale and I'm glad it's you. We're going to cap off our year. And again, Cole, if people want to check out Bit2Me or and see what you guys are going to be building next, or if they want to reach out and work with you somehow, get your mentorship and whatnot, where do they go and how do they do that?
Yeah, bit2me.com. It's a good place. We have Telegram also. We have an English channel as well. So it's just bit2me, bit2me. And then I'm on Twitter. Our handle is at Kowanazawa. That's it. And then, I'm also learning. So like the more people that are interested in this topic, we learn from each other. That's the nice thing about this industry that I was telling you about. Like a lot of people, there are obviously bad ex as well, but you know, it's such an open community. And yeah, wag me, right?
We're all gonna make it. Me indeed, LFG. Let's go. And again, thank you so much, Ko. But before I let you go, follow us on whatever podcast app you're listening to, whether Apple Podcast, Spotify, or any type of podcast app you're listening to. And again, if we did say some jargon, which I think we did, it's going to be in the show notes on hustleshare.com. And lastly, if you want to be part of our community, it's going to be the Hustle Share community on Facebook. Again, Ko, thank you very much.
Thank you, man. Thank you so much. Salamat kayo.
There you go. And I'll see you guys in the next season. Peace. We'll be right back.